the subject matter, etc. That's especially true in matters of law. There are very few people who would publish a book on the Talmud or on Maimonides, etc., without first obtaining a haskoma. So, for instance, in our generation, Rabbi Feinstein and others like him, their haskoma appears in the introduction of almost every book. But if you read the haskoma carefully, many of them will say that because of the fact that this book was published at such expense, etc., no one has the right to republish this book for X number of years without the permission of the author or the printer or whatever the case may be. And it usually was for 7 years. I'll discuss with you later that in the 18th century, one of the great disputes in Eastern Europe, a dispute that involved the Chassidim, the Misnagdim as well, was over which Babylonian Talmud edition had the right to be published in Eastern Europe. It was a dispute between those from Zhytomyr and those from Vilna in the reproduction of the Shas, in the reprinting of the Shas. And that became a tremendous dispute, such a dispute that many people would not intermarry into another family if that family had a Zhytomyr Shas in the house, or if that family had a Vilna Shas, depending on which side you were. So today we also have copyright laws, but the copyright laws are, first of all, there's printers in Israel and printers in the United States, the international copyright laws, and it's hard, though there have been suits to enforce them even today. But the method of enforcing copyright laws in the Jewish world was by the cherem, that if someone violated the copyright law, then by violating it, he would be placed into cherem, and his books would be banned, and nobody would buy them, and he would be condemned to lose all of his money on it, etc. It was that threat of economic sanctions that really was the weapon against the renegade who would break the laws of the copyright. So that was a new type of situation. There always were people who violated it anyway, as you can imagine, and there always were underground presses and all sorts of things, but generally speaking, that was the way that the matter was preserved. The strength of the Jewish influence in the printing press is seen in the fact that so many non-Jewish printers obtain Jews to carve out for them the Hebrew letters so that they would have plates of Hebrew letters and be able to print Hebrew books as well. There was a period of time in Italy that the Hebrew market was almost as great as the non-Hebrew market. And that, again, is an attestation to the strength of the Jews in the Renaissance and as to what they, what kind of influence they had. Now, you have to remember that the Renaissance also was the age of fakes, phonies, charlatans. I think every age is the age of fakes, phonies, and charlatans. But in the Renaissance, it was extremely popular. People passed themselves off as all sorts of things. And the world was gullible. Barnum said there was one born every minute. That's true in every century. That there's a sucker born every minute. And the Jewish people were not immune to that either. We have here, during the Renaissance, the appearance of three people, all of whom had a profound effect on the Jewish people and a profound effect on Jewish history. And they can loosely be categorized as false messiah people.